Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 117 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. In this episode, I have the great pleasure of talking to Steven Rossler from Rossler's Blue Cord Barbecue. I'm not going to make this intro too long because it's a long interview and it's worth listening to every moment of it. Steven is incredibly passionate, and we get into why it's called Rossler's Blue Cord Barbecue, and we talk about a lot of very emotional and troubling moments in his life that have built to where he is today and shaped him as a person, things that happened in the Army that I'm honored that he would share that with me. And it's kind of interesting how he kind of sees the barbecue world as the Army world that he was involved with, the sense of camaraderie and family. And I see that too. I see how much, how incredible the barbecue family is. So I really think you're going to love this. You're going to see his passion. He's very, very close to completely doing his dreams with barbecue that he wants to do, and we get all into that. Thank you, Stephen, for your services. Thank you to everyone in the armed services for their service. What you're doing and what you've done cannot be thanked enough. But especially Stephen, thank you for sharing your story. And this episode is sponsored by The Smoke Sheet. The Smoke Sheet is a barbecue newsletter, a weekly newsletter that is put out by Ryan Cooper, Barbecue Tourist, and Sean Ludwig from NYC Barbecue. It's just chock full of tons of information, barbecue openings, closings, news at all of any relevance. Every time I do open it, I scroll through it, and there's tons of stuff that I know about, and I try to stay on top of everything. You can sign up at bbqnewsletter.com. That's bbqnewsletter.com. There's also information about events, upcoming events, because I always miss out, and I'm sure a lot of you guys always miss out on events. You hear about it the weekend that it happened, and or hear about it the day before. So this way you can pre-plan it. That's a really important tool. Has a recipe of the week, which is just awesome. Always really good. I've used a number of those. I've been on board since day one for this. And a really cool feature is they have links to current podcast episodes and YouTube stuff that you might not have heard of. So it's totally worth signing up. You can sign up again at bbqnewsletter.com. The Smoke Sheet, barbecue news worth consuming. Check it out. And if you're enjoying these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out on anything. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with all my links to podcasts, all my YouTube stuff, all my barbecue joint tours and butcher shop tours and all that cool stuff. But enjoy this.
Yeah, man, I'm ready to go. I've been up for a while. You know, I did PT this morning and then just been standing by. I'm actually the company first sergeant, so I have my commander I report to, but like I'm the next in line. Which for me, like that's a really big deal. Yeah. I just let him know, as hey brother, I'm going to be in a little bit late. I'm finally like, we finally like were able to make this interview.
Yeah, yeah,
work.
Yeah.
Like he's like, yeah, I mean, you know, I have 14 months till I retire. So everyone's very big on like, you know, so it's good.
So everybody like, are they like really pushing everybody like for the next chapter of their life? Is that kind
yeah.
of?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, it's cool because like where I work at, it's the Fort Hood WTU Warrior Transition Unit, and that's what we do. We help soldiers transition back to the fighting force or back to the workforce, you know, because most of the people we deal with, or at least my company deals with, is Compo 2 and 3, which basically means National Guard and Reserve. Okay. So, these soldiers, you know, they get injured or whatever the case may be. It's just that. But yeah, it's good, man. And plus I get to take advantage of everything. So it's
that's
it's
awesome.
A double whammy.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And first off, thank you for your service. And
thanks.
It's just beyond where like, I know that speaking for millions of people, thank you so much.
Right.
And that's awesome. Yeah. And I appreciate everything you do. And 14 months, that's going to go by pretty quick.
Oh, it's awesome, man. I mean, it's hard to believe it's been 18 and a half, you know, years, but it's,
you look like a kid.
Yeah,
like,
I know. That's what everyone is always like, dude, what the heck? You know,
like 26.
I have tattoos and, you know, have young kids and they're not here right now. My two young girls, but you know, it's a 4-year-old, well, about to be 4 and about to be 1-year-old. And they're like, dude, you started late in your career. And I'm like, I'm glad I did, because now I get to enjoy everything, you know, with them. So, but yeah, thank you very much, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's awesome. And thank you for the upcoming barbecue stuff that you're in. Like,
for sure.
What you're doing now, that's like a double whammy for me. That's like,
yeah.
And for all of us. Let's go back to your history. Where were you born?
So, I was, it's kind of crazy. I was born in Abilene, but, Abilene, Texas.
Yeah.
Brought to San Angelo literally like a week and a half later. Actually, I was born July 3rd and July 9th. They called my mom and told her I was born, my mom and dad, because I'm adopted. Parents picked me up like 2 weeks after I was born and brought me back to Midland, Texas, and actually outside of Midland, Greenwood.
Okay.
Small school that has a suburb basically around it, or not suburb, but a community around the school. And so,
very small town.
Very, very small town, just right outside of Midland, Texas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, roughly 100 in my graduating class, which this year is my 20-year anniversary, or 20-year, you know, anniversary, whatever you want to call it, for being graduated. So it's kind of crazy.
Wow, that's crazy. No, it's interesting, too, just to get back to the small town part. Until I visited Texas, I didn't really realize what a small town was. A lot of people listening to this or watching this are from the big cities. And so,
for sure.
It's a different, like 100 people in your graduating class. I had, I think, 1,200 in my graduate.
Yeah. Well, even better is that, you know, in Midland, they had the same thing. Like, they have two big high schools, you know, Midland High and Midland Lee, which you see in Friday Night Lights. And then obviously Permian and Odessa High over in Odessa. But for me, like, I thank God daily that's like, man, I had this coaching staff and this community and obviously my parents too, but like everyone, it was like allowed to spank everyone's kid. You know what I mean? So it's like, you always had the reprimand there.
The kids were growing up right. Right.
Right. Exactly. You know, exactly.
And that's interesting too, that you were adopted into this life too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. We can touch on that here in a little bit, but like my faith has been very strong growing up. And then obviously when I deployed in 03 and 04 and then 11 and 12, my faith like kind of slipped away from me for a very long time, actually. And now I'm getting back to it. So it's good. Yeah. You know,
interesting.
Like,
that's important.
I believe in the higher power.
Wow. So. And that's amazing too, that like it's, and that's, I'd like to touch upon that because as we tell the story, because I think that it's important that people,
because
people do lose faith in a lot of things and especially when they're put in certain circumstances.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, but great childhood, you know, really just, you know, the thing with us is that living in West Texas, you know, my buddy Brett Bourne, you know, born at Brett's Backyard Barbecue, he was touching on it. You know, he lived just north of us, up in the Lubbock area, you know, like Texas Panhandle area. But there was like one place that we would go to barbecue, or two places, but one of them was Katie's Barbecue, which it stands for Kathy and Dwight, and they're amazing. Freeman, they're amazing family, and I'm still connected to them.
Oh, that's great.
And they're in Midland, but and their son graduated in Greenwood as well. But that was like the one spot, and then there was one other place, you know, that's been burned down, but there really wasn't a whole lot of barbecue, and there's no lakes in West Texas. So for us, it was always like, we're going to Fredericksburg or going here and going there. So I got to experience Central Texas style barbecue before it, like, I mean, it was big, but like now it's like on the map, and I was experiencing all these places before they even, you know, were, you know, big or, you know, known.
It was all the like pre Aaron Franklin stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Pre Aaron Franklin. I mean, the Kreitz, the Smitty's, the Blacks, like, we used to go to these places, and I remember as a kid, I loved it. Every time we drove into the hill country, I could just smell that. Like in West Texas, we smell mesquite, and you know, my dad, he used mesquite, and actually he used hickory as well. But like, we would get into the hill country, and those are those memories. Besides my dad's cooking, that I remember just every time, it was like, it would bring me just this. You know, it's like, I want to live here one day. And guess what? I'm living in Central Texas.
I know. You know what? It's so funny is I tell everybody, I said, I'm going to end up in Texas again. Like, it's just going to happen. And when you were a kid walking around these iconic places like Smitty's, and would you go check out the wood, or would you see the fires that are?
Well, it was the fires. I remember it was the fires was like the big thing. You know, as a kid, I think, you know, that, you know, that the fire and all that, you know, lighting and like,
yeah, it's, no, I loved it too.
Yeah, exactly. All of your, you know, your, you know, you've got all these emotions and, you know, like your, I don't know, just everything, you know, you just kind of like attracted to it, almost like a, you know, like, you know, bugs are attracted to light. Like that's how it is, you know, as a little kid. But, I just, you know, it was just so cool. And I remember that just very distinctly, like that was the one thing that always had, you know, and I keep saying my dad barbecuing, that besides what he did, is I always was like I had this love for food. Like it was always, you know, and I'm, you know, I weigh 210 pounds now, but like when I was growing up, I was a skinny kid, like a really skinny kid, but I love to eat. You know, I mean, it wasn't until like I went to basic training 140 and came out weighing 180 and everyone's like, what the heck happened to you? And I'm like, well, I hit, you know, my growth spurt finally. And, you know, like three hots and a cot, like it was an exercise.
Yeah, exactly.
Was great.
Exercising all the time. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But now was your dad grilling? Was he grilling or offset? Was
he did grilling, and then he did the original, I guess you could say, ugly drum. So it was the old Brickman, you know, like vertical smoker.
Yeah.
And I remember that, I keep saying I remember, but the main thing with him was that every Sunday, you know, my mom and dad, they busted their rear ends. And, you know, we had 13 acres right in the prime, and they still have it right in the prime spot of Greenwood. That I think a lot of people kind of misconstrued it as like we were well off or whatever, but my parents bought this, you know, well in advance and like struggled to keep this. But it was like every Sunday, if my dad wasn't out on a drilling rig or working or my, you know, whatever the case may be, it was like your rear end is going to be with the family. Like, you know, if you got
something.
Yeah, exactly. Like we were family oriented, like every Sunday, you know. It's always, I always remember his smoked chicken. It was a lemon pepper base that he used. But the one thing that was kind of funny is that he would put that water pan in there, but he would add beer and potatoes. And so like, I would always love the potatoes at the end because they tasted like beer. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to get drunk. But obviously the alcohol is like dissipated. And he used Olympia, like the crappiest beer, you know, but.
You know, what's funny is I have there's like a fond spot in my memory. Yeah. I went cross country with some friends when I was a kid and we stopped I was 19, 20, but we stopped, yep. But we had Olympia when we were in Washington and we loved it then because we didn't know what we were drinking. But,
exactly.
But now if I have it, if I see it somewhere, I'll order it because
it's not the best. So, but it was just awesome, you know, just, and that was the big thing with my dad. And then Saturdays, you know, when I was younger, he had a lot of stress on him, but one thing he always did was he always grilled steaks on Saturdays as well. Like, or at least attempted, you know, to do that because there was times where he was always gone or whatever, but majority of the times grilling steaks, he had speakers outside
and
he would listen to this old, like, you know, Bob Dylan and things like he listened to different genres, but I always remember Bob Dylan playing. And like, that actually is a love of music that I have nowadays too. You know, it's just all these memories that my dad used to do. It's just like, it's amazing. You know,
it sounds like we lived a very similar life, except for I was in the suburbs. I wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah. So, but it was good, man. And life is good. You know, I've had fallen outs with my parents, but I mean, mainly that's just me and my dad, like we're like the same and we're like, I'm adopted, but it's the funniest thing because I butt heads with him.
That's so funny.
So headstrong, but it's good. You know, it's really good.
Did you go straight to the military after?
So that was the thing was that, you know, my parents, they said, hey, we'll pay for college. Like you're on the gravy train. You know, every Sunday we'll take you to go get groceries because by that time they didn't really hold me to that standard of coming home as long as I would at least attempt to go to church. And then, you know, but I tried to go to college for two semesters, man. And I just, you know, high school in general, I mean, school in general was tough for me. I think that I just didn't apply myself. So the 2 years of college I was enrolled. So it was like, okay, you're off the gravy train. Now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And so I joined the Army at 19. And I never looked back. You know, I they gave me two choices. They said, all right, you know, you can go this Ranger route, you know, this RIP contract, or you can go to be an infantryman, which it would have been the same job, an infantryman, but you can go to Hawaii. And I'm like, I'll go to Hawaii, please. You know, it was like, yes, you know. So a West Texas boy going to Hawaii. I think so.
And what were your duties in Hawaii? What was that about?
You know, I went to basic training at Fort Benning, Georgia. And the way our basic training works is it's basic training and our advanced individual training, but we call it advanced infantry training. So literally it's 14, 15 weeks long. And so after I got done with that, you know, I'm an infantryman. I have a blue cord, which everyone's always like, what does Rosser's blue cord mean? That was the infantry blue cord. You know, I'm still an infantryman today, but that was it. And then, you know, I go to Hawaii and I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be rainbows and, you know, waterfalls and beach time. No, I was far from wrong. I enjoyed all of that. But, you know, I was an infantryman there. I mean, we were light infantry, so everything we carried was on our backs, 100-pound rucksacks on our backs. You know, we're walking 25 miles, you know, road marches every quarter. And, you know, we trained a lot in the we call it the Kahukus and the Kualoas, which is north, or, you know, the north side.
It's Oahu, the island, or Big Island?
Oahu. Yeah, Oahu. It was Oahu. Okay. So we'd be looking down at Turtle Bay Resort, you know, thinking like, man, look at all these girls down there, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, look how sunny it is. But guess where we were up there, you know, in the rainforest, yeah, it's raining on us and we're training, you know, so. But it
were
was
you
a lot.
Were you train? Were they training you for like jungle operations or?
Yeah, jungle warfare basically, because at the time September 11th hadn't happened. Okay. So I was pre September 11th. So the first like 8 months that I was in the Army, well, besides basic training, you know, we were just training, you know, just jungle warfare, jungle tactics, all of that. And then we did a rotation in Australia, which I call it a rotation. It was really 30, 45 days. Huh. And September 11th happened and we were in Australia. And I'll never forget.
Yeah, what was that like finding out?
Oh, man.
I've never heard from anybody in the military what that was like.
So let's just say, you know, beforehand, there was no gate guards. Like in Hawaii, there was no gate guards. You could basically come and go as you please through base and all that. So we're in Hawaii. I mean, we're in Australia and this happens and they're waking us up in the middle of the night and they're like, you know, you're not going to believe this. And our commander's telling us what just happened. And we're watching it on this little small TV. I mean, you know, 13-inch TV.
Wow.
And we're sitting there just like, wow, this is crazy. This is insane. Like, we're going to go to combat. Like, you know, and we were a very close-knitted company anyways, because it was only a company size element. And so we were like, oh, we're going to go to combat. Like, they're going to make us deploy from here because we're, you know. And obviously that's not going to happen, but it felt like
it was going to be a knee jerk reaction. Yeah,
exactly. And that's exactly what it felt like. So, I remember we were on our way back as they pulled us out of the field. And they were on our way back and like the way that their vehicles work, they don't work like a big army truck. You see where there's flaps, you know, coming down. We're actually facing out. You know, like say if a truck is going northbound, we're facing out eastbound and westbound. Like, I mean, we're facing out like, you know, yeah, exactly. And so there was people passing by us and I'll never forget this truck passed by us and it had, you know, America under attack and it had the towers. I mean, I just got chills thinking about it and talking about it. And it just like, I was like, this is surreal. Like, this is very surreal. So we had a weekend out and, of course, you know, we were chanting and everything. Like we were basically pumping yourselves up, USA, all that. And then it was time for us to go home. Well, we're going home through the actual, you know, through the airport there in Brisbane. And, you know, we have our weapons because, you know, you don't load your weapons in some rack or whatever. And then no, we're flying commercial. And I mean, the Australians were chanting for us and it was crazy to think that, and that's what it's tough about the world today, but the world at that point, where everyone was combined and we were united.
It did feel that
way.
And
it's so tough, you know, mm-hmm. It's so tough, but they were chanting for us. And then we get back to Hawaii. We have a full on escort from the airport all the way back up to Schofield Barracks. And then we get there and we see concertina wire. We see gate guards.
Wow. It's changed.
I mean, everything imaginable. And it was like an overnight change. I mean, it was just crazy.
Wow.
Just crazy.
And it probably hasn't changed since.
No, it hasn't. I mean, it's everything, you know, obviously the security is tighter. I mean, it was tight then. I mean, it was super, super tight.
Yeah. You weren't going to get in probably, type. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
you just want to stop that we rogue element or something, or the
yeah, exactly. And we were doing the gate guard as well, which, you know, units still do that, but you know, getting too into that, but it's just crazy. It was just crazy, man. It was chaos. So
at that point, at what point did you get deployed? Did you go home first?
So I got back. We got back to Hawaii, and then. You know, it was my time to leave Hawaii, and I had already chosen. I had already re-enlisted for Fort Hood for here where I'm at now. So I got here in 03, basically late 03, and I was here for a week and then deployed to Iraq for the remainder of the time. I think it ended up being like 8 months. 8 month deployment. So
we hadn't invaded, or we were just invaded.
No, we had already invaded. In fact, I met up with 4th ID. So, you know, 3rd ID kind of came in and 4th ID came in and what have you, but we were already established. Okay. And so where I came in, I was on the Iranian border. So the northeastern side of Iraq. And, you know, it was crazy because these guys had already been there. They got the unit I met up with. Great bunch of guys, and they welcomed me in. In fact, one of the guys was from basically like a guy I went to basic training with. So it was really cool to see that and see how our careers had gone in the last 3 years. But they welcomed me in, and you know, I was a young kid then. I was, you know, 22, 23, something like that. And you know, that deployment didn't so much affect me. Other than my personal life, which I don't really get into piece, but I went through a divorce basically. And so, but my personal, like, that's what messed me up per se. But, you know, I was so Army still then. It was like, it was focusing on my military career. So,
and at that age, you feel a little invincible and
Exactly. And I think that's what it was, is I felt invincible. And, you know, our company had suffered a loss, prior to me getting there, but I didn't know, you know, Special Pertle and or Corporal Pertle, but I didn't know him. So it was tough for me because it was like, man, you know, all these guys are kind of, you know, they're suffering from that, but I just did what I do, you know, I was motivated and, you know, and basically, you know, just did what I did. I mean, we, you know, as an infantryman, we just, you know, adapt and overcome, you know. So
how many tours in Iraq did you do?
So I just did that one. That was from 03-04.
Okay.
Funny story, you know, I got back in 04 and they were like, so we're making all these infantrymen recruiters. And I was like, dude, I did not join the Army to be a recruiter, you know.
For sales,
like, what the heck? Yeah. So they asked me, they're like, you know, if you have to do this, so where do you want to go? And I'm like, well, you know, I just went through, went through a divorce, whatever, you know, I was like, well, I want a fresh start. Let me go to California. So, they're like, okay, you're going to San Luis Obispo, California, slow. And I'm like, slow, what does that even mean? You know, they're like, oh, it's short for San Luis Obispo. I was like, oh, okay, duh. You know? So yeah, anyway, yeah, exactly. You know? So I start looking it up and my dad actually, you know, he starts looking it up. He's like, son, you know, we're German background because, you know, obviously our last name is Rossler. He's like, dude, there's a big German, you know, community there, or not community, but just like the influence.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking like, okay, like, you know, I started looking up and Cal Poly's there and everything. And so I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a lot of fun. And then I got there and then it was a whole lot of fun. Like it was
stressful. It's a great city. I love San Luis Obispo.
Beautiful, beautiful city. You know, the first 2.5 years, because I was there for almost 4 years. First 2.5 years, I was real focused and whatever. And I had a great group of, it was just civilian friends. It was one Army guy that was a recruiter, but he was single too. And so it was a great group of friends, but they were all getting ready to graduate. So they graduated and left. And so I was kind of, you know, and he actually left too. And so it was like me by myself, and I already went to the bars anyways, cause I'm a single guy, like, hello, like, you know, where are you going to go? And the bar that I always went to, Black Sheep, I started working there as a door guy.
Oh.
And then, you know, bar back. And so this is all moonlighting, obviously. And then I would go behind the bar and I would, you know, as a bar back, but I would bartend a little bit, but it was mostly bar backing. And then for that next, like, you know, year and a half or whatever, 2 years, it like basically I formed all these great friends that I'm still really good friends with now.
That's fantastic.
I just haven't been out there in forever, you know, and it's family, you know what I mean? I have a family now, so it's different for me.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not like a single guy buys a plane ticket and goes out there and then sleeps on couches, you know. Now it's like, it's a little bit more, you know.
But it so, is somewhere, if you come to visit Los Angeles and have a couple days, it's a great, just driving up there through Santa Barbara, dude, then up there, it's
perfect.
Good for your soul. Yeah.
It really is. It clears your soul. And, you know, no matter what people say about California, you know, a lot of people get, oh man, California, they have all these rules and regulations. I'm like, no matter what, like California is like a second home to me, and it always will be.
Wow.
Always,
I didn't know this.
Always will be, you know? So, but it's awesome. Slow is awesome. And then, so then fast forward, I had a couple, like 18 months till I retired, or not retired, but I was going to get out of the Army. And I was pretty much done because, you know, I talk so highly of recruiting, but or SLO, but my recruiting time there was so rough on me because it was Darren Bush's era. It was in California, which no offense, because, you know, I love my California families, but the people there just weren't accepted of the war going on, you know, and I get it. Like, I understand it.
But that is the mindset. And you were in a college town too. And
Yeah. And our higher ups, they especially didn't care. They were like, we had a station just south of us down in Santa Maria. Like every single one of them were fired because they were doing something like they were doing illegal, like recruiting stuff. And they were like, I remember our chain of command was like, well, at least they were trying. And I looked at them. I'm like, what did you just say? At least they were trying. Are you kidding me? So I had a bad taste in my mouth of the Army after that. So, anyways, fast forward, I had to go somewhere cause I had some time left. And so they sent me to Fort Jackson, literally on the other side of, you know, of the United States, exactly the same mileage from my parents' house to SLO, but my parents' house now to South Carolina, where I stationed, like literally, like I think a couple miles off, like couldn't have been the more crazier, you know, story. And so I worked at a grenade range for basic training. And let me tell you something, man, like I got my motivation back, but like, that was like being in combat. You have these brand new soldiers throwing live hand grenades and you're like, dude, what is going on? You know,
I didn't even know that's something. I didn't even realize that was something people did still.
Yeah. Well, it was cool though, because like majority of the time, you know, I think what basic is 8 weeks long. So, we were getting soldiers that had like 7 weeks into it. And then, you know, once they graduate, they go to their advanced individual training, whatever their job is. But so we're getting soldiers that were like really kind of, they knew, you know, the standards and disciplines of the military. Well, we had one time we had a week, like week one soldiers. So basically week zero, they didn't even like, they weren't even shaved properly. Their uniforms looked like crap. So this female, I'll never forget it. You know, you're in the grenade range with them and you're basically kind of do everything for them. All they have to do is really throw it. Well, I tell her like, I'm, you know, proper grip, you know, she put it in there, thumb to clip, twist, pull, pin. And then, so like, as soon as they say twist, pull, pin, they're supposed to get up and get ready to throw the hand grenade. Well, she turns to the tower. Like, I mean, it was so quick. She turns to the tower and throws it. And I'm like, what in the heck is like, and so when she threw it, it like lobbed, but it didn't go towards the tower. It was in the, like the bay with us. And so I like, actually, no, it went over, excuse me. So it went over just a little bit, but the bay, like it's, we had two sets of bays. So one was like higher than the other. So the bottom piece that was lower had like tire stuff in it in case it's inside the bay with you. Well, it wasn't in the bay, but it was in the tire place. Like, you know, that like all the shredded up tire. So I threw her down so hard that I cracked her helmet that she had on, and I got on top of her. And of course the little wall that separates you from the tire stuff, it, you know, it protected us. But man, you talk about,
oh my gosh. I was
like, oh my gosh. And like the rest of the day they sent me home. So it was awesome. So,
oh my gosh.
So
did you end up going to Afghanistan then? Or did you end up?
I'm about to get into that, kind of crazy. You know, I re-enlisted for Fort Bliss, there in El Paso, Texas. And the reason why is I had to be like an OC, like basically an observer for a unit doing some, you know, basically gearing up to go to Afghanistan or whatever. So, about 09, end of 09, I transferred to Fort Bliss, brand new unit, brand new, like basically brigade all the way down. First Armored Division had just moved over from Germany. So there was no structure in place, none. Like, and this is, mind you, this is end of 2009. And I'm like, oh man, this is going to be crazy. Cause you know, here I am, these brand new privates are like, hey, what's up, man? Can I help you out with anything? And I'm like, I'm a seasoned staff sergeant, and my mind is just like, what the heck did you just say? Like, start doing push-ups. And I'm just like, I'm aggro, So anyways, we got past all that and the unit stood up and we trained together for all the way up until 2011, September, when we deployed. So we were very, very, you're talking about the end of 2009, wow. All of 2010, pretty much all of 2011, we were very close and tight-knitted, very, very close and tight-knitted. And then that's when we deployed, it was actually August of 2011. And so, the guys that deployed with this will be probably the worst part of the interview for me, like just talking about this, but it's okay. Good to talk about.
Okay. You can talk about whatever you want. Just.
Oh yeah. No. But it's so we deployed and we were going to WARDAC. So WARDAC and the Afghan, the province that, the RC East is and RC South, you have all these different, so RC East. But basically, the province we were in, that's where the Navy SEALs have been shot down and all of that. We lost all the Navy SEALs. So our AO was already hot. We already knew going into it that we're probably going to have casualties. And we were all thinking that none of us were going to make it back, because it was just like we were trained up. We were ready to go. But just we just were like, man, the area we're going, it's crazy. Very dangerous. So we're there and we're getting stood up down there and we're really finding, we have a good, we have a good battle rhythm and, we have our PL, our platoon sergeant. And then it was me, I was the weapons squad leader at the time. And December 3rd, 2011, we were on a mission. And what we were doing was we were helping clear the road of IEDs for, ongoing, convoys.
This is against the Taliban, right?
Yeah. The Taliban and all that. So we were going to Ghazni, and, the way that it worked for us was we had an actual crew that their sole purpose was basically IED follower, but it was a different MOS. So it was like the engineers. So they had all these crazy, machines and all that, like basically, all this crazy stuff. But we were the guys that were pulling security for them walking as they were slowly going over the roads. So we, found a couple IDs, but EOD can't go with us. Like they have to stay back in case some stuff goes down and then they might have to go somewhere else or, you have to kind of keep them centrally located. So we go back and get EOD and we come back and we clear a couple of IDs and then they find another one. So by this time, traffic is already backed up. And we've already cleared the road. So we're like, okay, we're good. So we finally get this last IED and we are like, okay, set, turn around. So we're on our way back, back to our cop, and I'm the first vehicle, my PL's second. And then we have, several other vehicles behind us. Well, my platoon sergeant, he was the seventh vehicle, and, rolling along and boom. Two sevens been hit, IED, two sevens been hit. Oh. And man, you talk about, the seventh vehicle, number one, you're like, okay, the seventh vehicle, like, hopefully it was just like the rear end or something, like some idiot just, he was sleeping, whatever. Like, so he was asleep. It was supposed to be my vehicle. So automatically, I don't think about any of that. Obviously I look at my driver and I didn't have to say anything. He was pale white. And he turned, like, we are big MRAPs, these big old up armored vehicles. And he turned that sucker like it was, like a sports car. And we were the first, we were the second. Our PL had already been there and kind of set up, he was calling in freaking, everybody calling up a nine line.
Yeah.
And the vehicle's on its driver's side. So we call that the TC, the truck commander side. So that's my platoon sergeant side. Now, mind you, the driver for him is my soldier, like falls under me. The gunner is my soldier. And then the medic, he falls technically under the platoon sergeant, but he always stayed with under me basically. And then we had an interpreter from Afghanistan. Oh. And, our medic, Ed, Doc Acosta, he was in the back and he wasn't moving. I mean, he was talking to us, but he wasn't moving. And we're like, oh my God. So we get him out. And then, you know, Specialist Mayberry, you know, he's in a gunner's hatch, but obviously, you know, KIA. So we pull him out and, you know, we're trying to get them, you know, get them back, get the, you know, we had obviously, another platoon come in and help us out. Like they got him back to the cop. And then at this time, the truck is on fire. Like the truck is engulfed in flames and it's on the truck commander's side. The tire's on fire. But if you've ever seen a burning tire, you know, it's insane. So
it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, you know, we crawl in there, me and a couple other guys, like we're taking all of our equipment. We're taking fire, mind you, at this time. And you
know, so this was an ambush, kind of like a
basically trying to be an ambush. We take small arms fire, not much, but some, you know, some small arms fire. But we've already set up a great perimeter, and the guys still this day couldn't have done a better job. Second platoon, like Punishers, like 2-5, like we were, you know, Action Company as a whole, like Action Company, our company was awesome. But so that I'm thinking, like, I'm like, guys, we have to flip this truck. Like, we have to flip this truck to see if we can get one of the doors open, because we just can't get, you know, we can't get in there. There's smoke coming in. You know, I came in, came out, like a couple other guys came in, came out. Now, where the truck is, you have a hole. And then, like, say, here's like where the, you know, the TC and the driver are. There's a small little area right in through like the vehicle. Like, say, if the vehicle's turned up here, there's a small little area that you can come into to get, you know, to them. And we couldn't get in there because there's so much black smoke and, you know, and it's like, oh my God, like this is insane. So we flipped the vehicle over. Like it was so quick. I just remember the guys and I was so proud of it, but they flipped the vehicle, you know, over on its side or, you know, back up right. And you know, the door handle's all smashed in that, you know, and the vehicle's just, and we just couldn't get to them. It kills me to this day, you know, their families. You know, I've talked to all their families and, you know, it haunts me. It haunts me daily. It haunts me. And I've gone through a lot of it. I mean, I've gone through a lot with that. That was this, you know, December 3rd, 2011. And then unfortunately, you know, March, and it's coming up, you know, you know, March 5th is coming up, that 2012, Doc, he didn't make it. Doc Acosta, he didn't make it. And him and Mayberry were both from California. And you know, it just, you know, it sucks, man.
Sorry. Like, you know, that kills me.
Yeah. But, you know, that's actually part of what Rosser's Blue Cord Barbecue stands for, is, you know, is that I basically, you know, I'm doing all this, not just for them. I'm doing it for myself, obviously, but I'm following my passion because I know that's what they would want. Mm-hmm. And I know that's like, if I was them, I would want them to do the same, you know what I mean? And not just live in this, you know, self-pity and which we do, you know, as veterans and active duty members that gone through this crazy stuff, we do. So, fast forward, you know, like the whole, you know, basically almost a whole year, it was rough. I mean, we air assaulted. I think we had the most air assaults, the most, you know, most bombs, basically JDAMs dropped in that particular time frame. Wow. We were air assaulting in the middle of winter when that's not even fighting season, but we were fighting. You know, the rest of us made it back, couple scratches and bruises and things like that. But, the rest of us, we made it back. And, I was in El Paso for, I had gotten orders to go to come to Fort Hood again, but I was in El Paso for the next like 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
Just trying to find myself. And, you know, we had barbecues and cookouts and things, just to kind of collect, you know, keep each other intact, but it just wasn't the same, you know, it just wasn't the same. So, I had orders to come to Fort Hood as an instructor. And, you know, I wasn't too sure about instructing. It was basically the future leaders of the Army. So when you're enlisted, the lower enlisted, before you become an E5, or if you're an E5 or a sergeant, you have to go through what's called a basic leader course. It's been warrior leader course. And even before that, primary development leader course. But anyways, you know, so that's what I was doing, you know, and I get there and I'm not I haven't recovered from any of like what happened in Afghanistan mm-hmm. because basically I kind of took it upon myself to be the dad, like now that we know we lost our platoon sergeant and everything. And we ended up getting another guy to help us, you know, help us out. But I was like the glue that kind of kept everybody together. So I never showed any emotion or
anything. Yeah. So you couldn't break down. Yeah. You couldn't really deal with it. Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. My PL and I, we talk all the time, but now I'm dealing with all these things. I'm drinking heavily. I'm doing things I shouldn't be doing. And, you know, I get there and I'm supposed to be this, like, you know, creases in my uniform and like good haircut and all this stuff. And I just, you know, I didn't have it in me, you know? And so, you know, I broke down and I just told him like, hey, I need to get help, which was rough on me to even as a man, number one, as an infantryman, you know? So, basically, you know, I started getting help and then the chain of command, it was time for them to leave. And so we got a new chain of command. And when we did, the sergeant major that came in, there's two sergeant majors, but the deputy commandant, Salvador Montes, which I'm still very close with, he, you know, him and I kind of formed a quick bond. Where I was at was I was like in the operations section because they didn't want me down teaching the soldiers or whatever. But I was like kind of behind the scenes of how everything ran. And he was like, we're going to get you right. You're going to get, you know, I needed back surgery. So I've had my back fused together from just certain, you know, things that happened to me in Afghanistan. That mentorship really kind of motivated me to get better. And by this time I had met my wife and literally, it was kind of funny because I came home right after December 3rd happened. I came home around December 20th and I had met my wife at a salon. A friend of mine was cutting my hair, but like my wife worked there and she was engaged at the time. And so, you know, it was like, hey, how you doing? Oh, hey, how you doing? Okay, whatever. Like, you know, this is like what. So I kept not in contact with her, but I think I friend requested her. I was like, oh, I know this person. I friend request them, you know, whatever. And so, so fast forward, you know, now it's, I think what, 2000, let's see, we're looking at 2014, 15-ish. And so I had just gone through a horrible breakup. Her and her fiance didn't work out and she posted something and it was like, you know, I'm trying to get my mind right, but I'm like, yeah, hey, like, you know, trying to motivate her too or whatever. And I said something, she's like, oh, thank you. Like, and I had DM'd her, you know, and, she's like, oh, thanks. Do I know you? And I'm like, oh crap, man. I really didn't make an impression on her, you know? So anyways, I courted her, did all that fun stuff. And like, you know, shortly thereafter we started dating, like we got pregnant right away. So we did everything opposite, you know, but, you know, it's,
that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it does. No, it doesn't. But, you know, she was like, basically like, if you want to be with Paisley and I, you want to, you know, then get your stuff together. Cause, if not, then you're going to lose us, you know? And I'm like, well, that's not going to happen, you know? So, you know, she was another factor of why I got myself better, her and my daughter, my first daughter. And so, so that's what kind of led me into barbecue now.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that? What was the,
so basically it's kind of funny, man, you know, like, Before Herb, like even like the kind of start of Fort Hood, I met a good group of friends and most of us were single. So I'd barbecue and stuff like that. And it was the old, old offset, but they're like the ones you buy at Walmart, you know, the crappy, yeah. You know, like they're the Brinkman or I can't remember the name. But anyways, you know, they're very paper thin,
yeah,
almost
super thin metal. Yeah.
But you know, I made it work, you know, and so anyways, I did all that. And then with her, she was like, this stuff is really good. Like, you know, and then friends come over, they want you to make stuff for them. So what are you doing? You know? And so my dad had cooked a brisket way back in the day. And, you know, I never really dove into that, but I was like, okay, well, let me watch this Aaron Franklin video. Everyone talks about this Aaron Franklin video. Let me talk, you know? So I cook a brisket first time, great smoke ring. I didn't let it cook long enough, but it was almost like to that point, it was very tender, nice bark. Took it to a friend of mine that had cooked plenty of briskets. And he was like, man, you got something here. You have something good here, but you know, you need to cook it a little bit longer. And I'm like, yeah, no, like, you know. So anyways, so, you know, I start really diving into it and really start, okay, this is something I really want to do. And I'm already thinking long-term wise, what am I going to do when I get out of the Army? And I'm like, man, this is really fun. Like this is, and every time I go work with Brett or I go work with all these other people, like this is his full time. This is his gig. Like he gave up the workforce and, you know, his 401k and like, you know, everything, like
a really good job at Dell. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, everything, like his amazing job at Dell. And like, you know, he's on edge of that. Cause that's just how Brett is. Like, he's always like, you know, his mind's thinking and he's, you know, he's kind of, and I think a lot of that comes from his competition background too, because True. He has to be so serious. It's like, it's time to do this. Well, for me, it's always fun and games. And I don't mean that in a bad way, meaning like, this is like, I can walk away from this at any time. It just, this is what soothes my soul, soothes mm-hmm. my PTSD, soothes everything in life. This is so, I love working with Brett because I always try to make him laugh and I pick at him. We pick at each other like we're brothers. But at the end of the day, I think that's why we get along so well, is that, you know, I'm kind of like the jokester and then, you know, he's like the serious guy. I don't have time to be, you know, joking around. And I'm like, whatever, dude, like, it's not that serious. Like, just messing with him. Cause everything, his mind, like the way his mind thinks, I'm already two steps ahead of him. That's mm-hmm. that's how like as friends, you know, and as in the Army, I need to be two steps ahead of anybody, you know? And so we do caterings. Like if I do a catering for him, he's like, oh, you know, this, I'm like, Brett, I got it. Like, just walk away. I've got it. You know, and we're unloading the trucks and I'm like setting up everything. And he's like, oh yeah, you do got it. I'm like, yeah, dude, you know, so anyways, but
back then, how did you reach out to Brett? Did you somehow meet
him? No. So it's funny, man. You know, it being such a labor of love for me, you know, number one is I knew I needed to buy a bigger pit. So I found, you know, I was like looking for all these pits and everything. And I found this knockoff Jambo. It was on a trailer. It had a sink in it and all this. And I was like, well, that's a little bit too much for me. But now it's like, I'm like, this is way too small. Like it was 48 inches. But to me, that was huge. And plus it had an insulated firebox and all this. So, you know, Dwayne, he actually works up in, he's a competition guy, but he works up at Metals to Go there and Hewitt outside of Waco, but met him. He talked to me about doing competitions, like, ah, I ain't gonna do that, dude. But anyways, bought the trailer from him and, you know, called it, you know, the Duke or whatever. So that was like the earlier pit. And then I was like, you know what, I need to go out to Miller's. Cause I think it hadn't come out yet. The top 50 hadn't come out yet, but I was looking online of like places to go. So I go to the original Miller's, which is funny. You have their hat on because, when you had that on, I was like, this interview couldn't have been more perfect because, you know, it was just awesome.
It's like so it, actually one of my favorite hats.
It's awesome. You know? So, I'd already bought some meat church rub, you know, Matt Pittman stuff, but I'd never met Matt Pittman or any of that, but I followed him. So I had a meat church shirt on and I walk into the old, Miller's and Zach, you know, he works for 44 Farms now, but he was doing all their, like, you know, their logos and their branding, and everything. And so he welcomes me like with open arms. Oh man, meat church. Like, hey, yeah, this and that. And like, oh, I know Pat, Matt and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm like, dude, this is how the barbecue community is. This is like how the Army is. Like, this is a brotherhood, you know, it's, I can so just much. See it, you know? And so
that's a great analogy. Like, hey, man, I never thought about it that way. Yeah.
It's perfect, you know? And they take me back to the outside, mind you. It's like their pit. They had a pit lineup, you know. It was like,
was that like in an alley almost or something? Or
yeah, it was like the alley. Saying, it was on the side of the building. And you know, I met the two brothers,
Dusty,
you know, all of them. And I met Dirk, and you know, I love the Miller family because they have always welcomed us in. And Amadeo as well, you know, they've always welcomed us in with like open arms, like my wife and I, and obviously our family too. But, you know, it was just like, I was like, this is what it's all about. Like they were such a close, tight knit family and everything. And I was like, man, this is perfect. So, so I kept in contact with them. And then, Matt was given a class, like a competitions class. And so I signed up for it. And it was right outside of Fort Worth area. It was in the Fort Worth area where my brother lives in Mansfield, just south of Fort Worth. So we're late because I had to leave from Fort Hood. I had to work like night prior. So I call on them. They're like, yeah, don't worry. Like, you're fine. Like, just come up here. So we get up there and I meet, you know, finally, like the class is going on. And then Matt's like, oh yeah, you're the Army guy, dude. Like, I'm glad you made it, you know? And like me and Matt have actually kept in contact like ever since. And people like, I go to barbecue places or, you know, like barbecue, like Red Dirt. Red Dirt was the first time, but I'd go there and like, people were like, you know, even Brett was like, how the heck do you know Matt? Like, and I'm like, oh man, I email him, you know, every once in a while we talk or whatever. They're like, okay, like what the heck, you know? So,
but Matt's a good, he's really a cool great. Dude.
Yeah, really, really. And I met Cody Smithers, you know, they had, Bet the House, you know, like mm-hmm. Bet the House. And unfortunately they're not open anymore. So, really, really great, kind of first meeting the barbecue the barbecue community. And then it was like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is, you know, I'm telling Kristen, like, this is what I want to do. Are you on board? And she's like, yes, I have restaurant experience. She has like 8-9 years of manager restaurant experience back home. Great. And, you know, just awesome. And I'm like, okay, let's do this. And now, mind you, she gets to retire a lot sooner than I do. So like, even though like this is work for us, like this is our retirement. And so, you know, she's 10 years younger than I am. I'm about to be 38. So she's 28. So she gets a little bit easier ride in life, and not really easy ride because our girls keep her and she does a really good job with our family. But anyways, I started looking at pits, and you know, this is like Instagram. I started really getting on Instagram, and I see this guy, Flores Barbecue, Michael. And I'm like, man, that is the pit I want. Like, I've searched and searched and searched. I've found these Franklin style, and I've reached out to Austin Smokeworks. They're not hitting me back. I reached out to a couple different pit makers. They're not wanting to do what I want to do. So I reached out to Michael and I DM him, and he's like, hits me right back. And I'm like, oh, thank God. He's like, yeah, man, my buddy Sonny. And I'm thinking, Sonny, like, that's a guy's name. I'm like, okay, cool. And so I see this picture, like, it's kind of like a small Instagram. And I think it was Moberg Metals at the time. And it shows Sonny with his cowboy hat on, and he's standing on the top grate of Michael's three door, like that weird 750, you know, original Moberg. And I'm like, well, this is a country guy. Like, I can get down with this. Like, I need to go meet this Sonny guy. You know, he's like, hit up Sonny. And it was like that day, I had something going down in Austin. While I was like, I called Kristen. I was like, hey, I'm about to go meet our pit builder. Like, I think this guy is going to be the guy, you know? And I was like, she's like, don't get your hopes up because, you know, you met so many people and you're like, you just can't find the right person. And I'm like, okay. I was like, well, his address is 777. And I have this tattoo on me, 777.5. And so,
oh wow.
I was like, man, this might be like, you know, and this address is from when I was in SLO, and it was like this brotherhood thing that we had going on anyways. So I was like, I think this might be it. So I go out and meet Sonny, and Sonny's just out there piddling around and like finishing up Michael's, you know, he didn't have like these massive, like, you know, propane tanks like he does now. And I'm like, we meet and we both get chills. We're talking about like the address, and he's thanking me for my service, and we're talking about, you know, this or that. And I give him a coin that I like I had received you know, somewhere in my career, and it was actually really high coin. Like, it was a pretty big coin. It was a general that I had received it from. And so, you know, I give him this coin and I'm like, I'm going to buy a pit from you. I was like, I don't have the money to put it down, but I will buy a pit from you. And he like, we shook hands and like, we were like, okay, this is going to happen. And so, time went by and, you know, Sonny became this household name, but I'll tell you right now, Sonny did not stop texting me to tell me every, like, it was like every a week, but started into going to 2 weeks and then like a month, but he kept texting me. And I know why it kind of dwindled away, because he started getting busier and busier. Yeah. You can't just be texting Steven Rossler, this normal dude, you know, but that was right, you know, when Brett had really kind of, he let, I think Robert Sierra borrow the OG, we call it the OG, the 500. And then Robert, and then Ronnie Killian, and then Terry Blacks, you know, all these people just started ordering, but he kept texting me and saying, Steven, I'm getting pretty booked. I'm getting pretty booked. And I was like, thank you, Sonny. I appreciate you letting me know. I just don't have the money. So, mind you, it's 2016. Let me think. Was it 2016? Yeah, because I paid off 2000. Yeah, so 2016, I think Brett was doing a pop-up. And I got to, you know, he's doing a pop-up in his backyard doing this awesome stuff. And was it Christmas? Yeah, it was Christmas. And so anyways, I'm trying to think. I'm just trying to make sure my timelines. I'm pretty sure that was when. Yeah, but because, yeah, okay. Anyways, so, yeah, that happened. And then I was like, you know, Sonny was there. So my wife and I, we made a Yeti cup. It had Rosser's Blue Cord Barbecue on it. And on the other side, it had Moberg Smokers and it had his, you know, had his name. And I hand him the cup and I hand him a check. And I said, it's time for me to get on that list. And we had done it. We had done a catering and it was like, that was the coolest thing ever. It was like, dude, we just gave Sonny Moberg, like,
yeah,
we're on the list now. You know what I mean? And so that whole next year, you know, we did catering gigs. I had this awesome, awesome, awesome sniper rifle that I built. I mean, probably $10,000 worth of stuff into it. I had a, I call her my second mom. She bought it from me. She loves guns and stuff. But, you know, she's older too. So I was like, dude, this is awesome. She bought it. And I think she probably bought it probably because she believes in me and believes what I'm doing. And she's like, yeah, cool. And so I'll never forget sending that final payment to Sonny. And it was like, dude, this is for real. Like we, you know, we have it paid off like December of 2017. And then obviously fast forward to this year when I picked it up, but,
yeah. When did you pick it up?
You know, so October. Yeah. October. I think Sonny was done with it. In fact, I think it was your interview with Sonny.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He was talking to you about it. Yeah. Uh-huh. That I had just picked it up. So, but,
it took me so long to get a hold of Sonny too, cause he was so busy and I kept like,
God, man. I'm sure yeah, I was you, that, yeah. You didn't have this time like what you and I have right now.
Yeah. Know? I was like, yeah, I was probably that annoying guy from California. He's like, what is it? And then after he's like, okay, maybe I do. What
he's the nicest guy, man. So I'll tell you what, but, you know, through Brett and I, and then Michael, obviously, you know, later on we met up as well. Cause I only met Michael through Instagram but through Brett, really he's branched me out to all these different people and I've introduced him to some people too, like Mike Matt and a couple others, but, you know, Russell and John Brotherton and Michael and James from Reveille, all these different individuals, like, you know, the Snows crew. I love the Snows crew. Gosh. You know, without the barbecue community, like I've really kind of, you know, intertwined with all these individuals, like, and people from all over, like Tyler. You know, Tyler Hart, he's getting ready to do his thing, but we've all meshed together and it's like, we come from all these different areas, but the one common goal is barbecue, barbecue.
I've gotten to meet all these exceptional people like yourself and Tyler and all these, like, it's so awesome. Yeah.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. And, you know, Abe and Andrew, like the Moose Craft, you know, I love all them, you know, cause they're from California, you know, Abe's obviously from Texas, but they're all doing their thing in California. All y'all are in California. But like I said, we all have this common goal and it's like community, bring people together. Barbecue brings people together. And it's,
I texted Abe and Andrew and Michelle and Bert all yesterday. It was like, cause all these
dude, guys. Yeah. Well, I love seeing all your stuff when you go to Slap, you know, it's like, it's so awesome seeing all that community y'all have going out there. Like it's just, it's small right now, but I guarantee you it's blowing up big time. You know, we were just talking the other day, me and Andrew, or we were talking about that tent that they have that they serve out of with the netting and all that. And we're actually, we have something in the works right now, which I posted, 2 days ago, big things coming for us. And, we have something big coming that we're trying to work with a brewery where we won't be the only truck there, but, or, you know, trailer, because for us it'll be a tent and our smoker, but we're working something right now that it's looking like, you know, every Saturday they're going to be like, especially the springtime, probably won't happen till mid-April, because we've got so much stuff going on, but start mid-April all the way all summer long, and hopefully we can just keep it going, you know,
that's so great,
keep the ball rolling. I mean, we have 14 months to retire. It's like the catering is great, and that's what I mean, we might just stick with that, but I have to get my name out there. I have to get more clients so that my catering is once a week, twice a week, whatever the case may be, you know?
Well, and that kind of feeds out. I've noticed it a lot with like with Moose Craft Barbecue. I've noticed how being out there more, people started following them more on Instagram, and then it just like the lines grew, and now there's two-hour line. Like it's
Come on, like, and you know, I told, because Kristen didn't, she knows who they are because obviously Manfire Food, but last night I was showing her, like, we're messaging each other right now. She's like, what? And I'm like, she's like, why didn't you tell me this? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, she's like, first Brotherton. Cause I gave her John Brotherton's number. So she could text him about something about like chicken fried steak or something. She's like, oh my God, I have a famous person's like, you know, their phone number. And I'm just like,
it's fun. And that's like, I hate to say cute, but it's cool. It's like, it really is,
you know? And, you know, I've had the opportunity, you know, Leonard, you know, from Truth and all of those guys, they're all, you know, and I tell you one person that I really look up to, in this game. And I've met him one time face to face. We talk a lot. But it's Patrick Feeges, you know, cause he's a Purple Heart. You know, I have a Bronze Star with Valor, because of December 3rd. Yeah. But he has Purple Heart. I mean, he's like gone through it all. Like, you know, he's been, you know, everything. And so,
yeah, his story on Tales from the Pits.
Yeah.
It got me. I interviewed him prior and we didn't get into that. And I felt like such a jackass for not like getting into like, I respect him so much. And he's such great guy. And him and Aaron are so nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Aaron are awesome. And, you know, I talked at the town hall, and, you know, talking with him was just awesome. But, you know, just, there's a lot of people, you know, Russell, he served,
Russell,
you know,
too.
Bob Bill, like Crazy Bill out there, you know, at the Switch, you know, he served, you know, there's quite a few people that have served. Cody served in the Navy Navy, hopefully Coast Guard now. But anyways, you know, but there's been a lot of people who served, and I think I'll be the first one that retires. Like at least the barbecue community that I know of that is retired out of the branch of service, you know? So really cool. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the next chapter. I'm scared cause we're going to stay in Killeen, our Harker Heights, Killeen area. And, you know, we're not on 35, we're off of 35, you know, Miller's is on 35. And you have to get off 35 and you have to come in, and, you know, Fort Hood area in general, it's tough. It's tough for small businesses because you have such a fast turnover of soldiers.
True.
And so, you know, it's rough because, you know, you don't know what to expect. You know, you're like, you know, are we going to make it? But my wife and I are talking right now. We would really like to make a wedding venue as well. So like, basically we'd like to make a wedding venue, have a couple acres, because it's really pretty out here. It's really, really pretty. Now, there's some rough areas, but obviously we'd go out more towards the country, but make a wedding venue where people could come into, and then our house will be on the same property, but like kind of tucked away. And we're going to make a commercial kitchen. We're going to make a barnuminium. So like a metal building, but we're going to, you know, it's going to look like a house, but we're going to have a commercial kitchen. So I would be the on-site caterer if you need it. Part of this wedding venue, as we're going to do a food trailer, you know what I mean? So we're going to do the food trailer thing, but that's like kind of that's what we're thinking right now. And people are probably like listening to this, like, what the heck? Like, don't you want to do, and yes, I do want to do barbecue full time, but I have to find a way, you know, cause I'm going to get two paychecks. I'm out, you know, my VA disability. And then obviously my retirement, but I want to have that steady income coming in. I want to make sure that,
and create, you know, like a business, like a full business, like that's a rounded business, and that, exactly. And then you could still do the barbecue and still have that.
Exactly. And, you know, I have two weddings to pay for. I have two girls, so I have two weddings to pay for. So, and college. I don't want to think about the weddings, but it's inevitable. So, you know, and I have college to pay for, but, you know, it's good. And, you know, I just, you know, the barbecue community has saved my life. It really is. You know, I used to drink really heavy when I barbecued, and, you know, especially just you know, doing a whole brisket or something, I'd start off and he'd be like, oh yeah, like pounded beers, and then go to, you know, hard liquor, or, you know, to whiskey. But now I'm very focused, and like, I, you know, if we're at a festival, then obviously having fun. But when it's here at the house, you know, cause we do everything. We have a commercial kitchen. We prep all of our sides at, and then all the meat, and then we'll bring it, you know, like a, what do you call it? A commissary.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we'll bring the meat back, and then I'll smoke it at the house. And so, for us, you know, it's game on. It's like, this is my life on the line. This is our business, is Rosser's Blue Court Barbecue. This is us. We are representing us. So like, you know, that meat on that pit, like it's game on, you know, it's like, it's time to buckle down. So I'm, you know, I might have a few here and there, but like,
I've talked to other people that have said that they used to drink a lot when they cook, and now they don't. So I think that's, it's a similar story. That's something
that you can't, you know,
to stay focused, to stay properly focused. Yeah.
You really do. And, you know, this past weekend, and, you know, I kind of jumping around about everything, but not really jumping around, but this past weekend we did a barbecue competition, and Ryan Newman from Backline Fabrication, you know, I don't know if you've seen my smaller pit. Mm-hmm. Well, he took it off the trailer and then put it on a cart, and then had it powder coated army green, and like the thing is awesome.
That's
and
great.
So we did all that, but we competed under his name, Smoke and Rifles Barbecue, and I got 8th place chicken, which I was really proud of.
Well, that's cool.
You know, out of 78 teams or something, and he did the ribs and brisket, so we did pretty well. But just getting that 8th place chicken, you know, I've only competed 3 times. The first time I did the chicken, I got 6th place. Brett had got 5th place. And then the second time, Brett wasn't even there. He was at the brisket camp. And so we competed under his name, and we got 1st place chicken, and I did the chicken. So really happy about that. And this, you know, third time, 8th place chicken, and we were up against some really tough competition. So, but working with Ryan and all that is really cool. And, you know, Ryan and actually Sonny right now are working on a really cool, collaboration, a 250 that's gonna be blowing some people's minds. So, be expecting that next, probably month and a half or so, cause he's tied up. Ryan's tied up with, South by Southwest, you know, have down in Austin. But, I'm gonna tell you, man, like the barbecue community, like I'll never forget going and picking up the Grunt, the Moberg. And, you know, Ryan met us at the Switch, cause we all went to the Switch and had brunch, and he met us up there, and hit, like seeing him and Sonny talk, like that was what was really cool. And I've seen Sonny and the Mill Scale Boys, like they've talked, and other guys that pit build, but it's just really cool how even that, like that's their competition, you know, and obviously the barbecue committee, we're all each other's competition, but everybody just comes together and we support each other, you know, stickers going on everything, you know, you see stickers everywhere.
That's the best part. And that's it's all about love. It's like, and you want to like lift each other up, but like, what's the point? You don't want to destroy people. What's the point?
Exactly. And I love that about the one thing, Sonny, it always sticks to me is that he's like, I can't build them all, Steven. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know what I mean? He's like, you know, I know that I lose some and then I gain some or whatever the case may be, but he's like, I can't build them all.
That's a great
quote. It was, you know, man, Kevin, I you know, I can't, you know, number one, my brother's name is Kevin. So it's really cool that, you know, that we met like this and that you reached out to me. And, you know, I know we've been going round and round and round and just couldn't make it happen, but here we are. We made
thank
it happen.
You so much. I this was such a great story, and thank you for sharing all those details.
It's rough to talk about, but it's me, and it's what it doesn't define me by any means, but it's what motivates me to make this work.
And what shaped you as a person, what created you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we, you know, last night, you know, I trimmed the brisket, I seasoned it. And yesterday I left, I had to go back to work, and my wife has really, you know, monitored the pit. She's really got that fire management down, which is really awesome. And this brisket turned out amazing. Like these briskets we had on there turned out great. But it's like things like that love and that, like when you open that butcher paper, that pack, like it's like a Christmas, mm-hmm. Christmas morning. That's the same kind of thing that I want to feel 20, 30 years from now. I want to feel that every time I open it up. It's like, I know they're cooked, I know all that, but it's just, unwrapping that, and you might have a customer that's been coming to you, you know, for the last 10 years, you know, 5 years, 10 years, whatever the case may be. And just seeing that and that excitement when they eat that barbecue, you know, eat your barbecue, there's just something about that because you're like, man, that motivates me to get, you know, to go more and more and more, and, you know, and having these return customers that are now friends of mine, so you know, and it's just awesome. You know, it's just really, really awesome. So,
well, that's great. Well,
just be looking forward to it.
So. I'm so excited about your future and about meeting you in person and
hanging out
and eating your food. And I'm stoked for you. This is really cool. And thank you so much. And yeah, and I think people will get so much out of this interview. So much.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate everything. And yeah, if you need anything from me, don't hesitate. When you come out to Texas, man, I'll be mad if you don't hit me up.
So. Yeah, I'll be upset too if I don't see you.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, have a great rest of your week. All right, thanks.
All right, brother.
All right, take it easy.
We'll talk to you.
Thanks so much. Bye.